This is a recording of the Massachusetts Technology Leadership Council's open source cluster meeting titled Microsoft and Novell Building Bridges. It was held September 26, 2007 at Silicon Valley Bank in Newton, Massachusetts. The cluster sponsors are the law firm of Choate Hall & Stewart and IBM. This podcast is sponsored by Software Garden, producer of the training video, A Developer's Introduction to Copyright and Open Source, Why a Lawyer is a Developer's Friend, www.softwaregarden.com.
Tom, thank you very much, and thank you to the council for hosting this session. I have a sense that it will be very informative and also a bit lively. Not only are there press people in the room, but also lawyers, a lot of them, so that may make things interesting too. Dan, how are we looking over there? Ready to rock?
Introduce who you are and who everybody.
Absolutely, we'll do that. Just wanted to make sure we weren't going ahead too quickly. All right. So as Dan Bricklin said, this is the Mass Technology Leadership Council's session on the Microsoft Novell arrangement. We'll hear much more about what that means and why it matters to you. And hello to everybody who's not actually in the room and listening to this on podcast. So just by way of starters, what we're going to do is have a very interactive session overall. There are no PowerPoints. The machine has been shut off. And the group here has been kind enough to do this conversation style, so really no presentations. There will be sort of introductions and a brief discussion of what the arrangement is about, but given that this is a highly knowledgeable audience, we will get quickly into Q&A amongst the panel and then quickly into Q&A with you, and we encourage any and all questions that you might have. And one other logistical thing is we probably will end right around 10, just because there are people who have to run off to planes and so forth. But the council welcomes you warmly to stick around and network afterwards. So that's the story. We're going to do intros in an unconventional way. We're not going to read the impressive bios of the four people here because they're in the program, but to give them a chance to surmise why they are here. Why have they been invited to present this deal and this story to you, to tell it from, roughly speaking, their perspective. For my part, I'm John Palfrey, and I'm director of the Berkman Center for Internet and Society, which is a think tank at Harvard Law School working on these set of issues. And of the people on the panel, I know the least about this arrangement, so I will start to defer to them. So just for the purposes of coming down the aisle this way, maybe we'll start with you, Justin. If you wouldn't mind, tell us who you are and what your role in this story is in the sort of 2 to 3 minute form that would help inform the group as to what we're here about.
Hi. My name is Justin Steinman. I'm Director of Marketing for Linux and Open Platforms at Novell. That's my day job, marketing SUSE Linux Enterprise. My night job is marketing the Microsoft Novell agreement. So I'm responsible for all the joint marketing we do with Microsoft, as well as the messages that we take to the market. I got involved with this relationship probably about 13, 14 months ago at this point. And if you notice, that means the deal was signed November 2nd. So around this time last year, I was on the team that was negotiating the partnership with Microsoft and how this overall thing would look in the market, what some of our joint value propositions would be.
Awesome. Peter.
Good morning, everybody. Apologize, we're a little bit late. We're by Newton Center, by Starbucks, circling, and then we finally got here. But
it's not the easiest place
to find. I apologize on behalf of Carl and myself. Again, Peter Rodericks. I'm director of customer advocacy and the intellectual property licensing group in Microsoft. And the reason why I'm here is, A, I'm not an attorney. And probably one of the reasons why part of this team was is the focus was on customers and partners that we had relative to feedback on what we needed to be doing about bridging the gap. There was IP discussion, IP dialogue going on. There was interoperability dialogue going on. And our executive team felt that we needed folks that had customer experience, sales experience, but more importantly, that could listen and bring that feedback. So my role as part of the story is really the customer and the end user and the people that we've been working with on a day-to-day basis and getting hardcore feedback and trying to incorporate that in terms of how we execute the agreement between Novell and Microsoft.
Perfect. Susan.
Hey, good morning. I'm Susan Hasty, and
I head up our global strategic partnerships at Novell, both Microsoft as well as a few others, including HP, IBM, Dell, SAP, Intel, and AMD. But have spent a great deal of time this past year. Prior to this role, I was president for the Americas at Novell, and really came from the field, as Peter as well, from the field and sales and delivery side of the organization. Spent a great deal of time working with customers. And when we announced the partnership with Microsoft, stepped into the role to head up the partnership with my counterpart, Susan Hauser, at Microsoft. And it's been, we're coming up to our first year anniversary. We've been happy newlyweds, I'd say, over the last year, and actually have made some really great progress in terms of the work that we've been doing. So my role is to ensure that we have a very close go-to-market around this partnership and specific program, which includes technical collaboration as well as business collaboration. And really, both Peter, myself, Justin, and Carl, the rest of the team, have really spent a great deal of time out with customers, understanding what are the interoperability issues that they're dealing with, how can Microsoft and Novell work with them in partnership to really solve some of those complex issues and help them move their business forward. So my role is, as Ron said, to make it happen and to make sure that we really deliver on the commitments out to customers that are part of the partnership between Novell and Microsoft. And I think we've made some good progress there this past year that we would like to share with you today. And there's some further things that we plan to do together as we execute against the commitments that we've made out to the market and to our joint customers. So thanks, everybody, for coming.
Susan, thank you. Carl.
Good morning. My name is Carl Brandt. I am a lawyer or attorney at Microsoft in the Intellectual Property Licensing Group. The reason I've been asked, I believe, to be a part of this panel is that I was one of the original attorneys that was on the deal that we negotiated and executed with Novell. I've also been helping out Peter and his group as far as the execution of the agreement and ensuring that everything's running smoothly, hopefully. And so I think I've kept some good background on what started the agreement, how we got together, how we finally came to terms, and then further on how we've ensured that the execution has met the customer's needs.
Excellent. So we have, as you can see, a highly qualified panel to talk on this score. There's kind of three big picture topics that I think we wanted to get at least in this opening session. One is to get grounded in terms of what the deal is exactly. I suspect most people read the news releases initially, or maybe customers and know it, but there's been some updates, presumably, in the last year, so get some of that on the table. We want to address some of the legal issues. It's not all lawyers in the room, so we won't go down into the weeds of every aspect of GPL3, but we might sort of broach some of those issues, and I think we want to look also to what this portends for the future. Is this the way in which industry alliances will move forward, the software industry, and so forth, and what does that really mean for customers? And clearly that's a big emphasis and big part of the story. So starting with the first of those three, maybe starting with Peter, can you just give us really the core story here of how this came about from STARS? I think most people saw the man bites dog press release, right, when this came out and read the headlines, and people were trying to make controversy out of it and so forth. But what really brought you two to the table and give the kind of original story from your perspective?
Sure, I'd be more than happy to. So, great. Thank you, Dan. Sorry. The alliance just didn't happen. And if you step back about 4 years ago, a number of our account teams, a number of folks on our team were really reaching out to customers globally and trying to figure out, what is our bridge strategy? What's our interoperability strategy? What's our intellectual property strategy? There's a lot of moving parts at Microsoft. There's a lot of directions we can go in relative to trying to build a bridge. But how do we do that? Frankly, we really didn't know. We had some ideas and thoughts in terms of how we build a bridge with open source. How do we talk smart about patents and intellectual property? But more importantly, how do we keep building interoperability technology solutions? So about 4 years ago, we started reaching out globally to customers, to government elites, to partners, and asking for feedback.
And consistent feedback, absolutely consistent feedback for every customer I talk to, which is predominantly the large financial services firms around the globe and a lot of the healthcare and retail customers, said, Peter and Microsoft, look it. Number one, if you think there's potential patent issues, okay, we respect your opinion. Don't make it my problem. Do not make it the customer's problem, my problem. Take it off the table. Work with distributors. Work with the open source community to get that off the table for me. Two, you need to build interoperability solutions with the open source model. We expect you, being the software company that you are, to reach out and build these technologies, you know, from a systems management perspective and, you know, supporting ODF. And they got pretty specific, and it was every single customer. So we came back and we regrouped. We put a business case together, and hence, after putting the business case together, you know, Steve Ballmer funded our group, and we started going out and having discussions with the distributors. And as it turned out, Novell and Microsoft, arch competitors, right, over the years, you know, in terms of going after one another, and, you know, it's, you know the story there. When we really sat down, we had some very core fundamental commonality relative to philosophy. One is, yeah, my customers, being Novell, saying, are asking for interoperability solutions, too, in the enterprise. Yeah, and my customers are saying, you know, why can't open source companies work better together technically with commercial companies? And that's really the framework, you know, in terms of how this all started. And again, it really was driven by some very hardcore feedback, some unpleasant discussions that I had personally and others had with you know, intellectuals, academics, government elites, and customers.
We can be a real pain in the neck. That's right.
No.
The academics.
It was very real. It wasn't just a whiteboard discussion. Really.
Some of them were. Peter, thank you. Honest, candid take that there were unpleasantnesses that led to this pleasantness. So that's good. Susan, maybe you could sort of bring us up to date. Take the perspective of Novell and say, first, I'm not sure we've quite answered the what it is. We know it's interoperable. It's between your two companies. It helps your customers. But what is the nature of the arrangement that you've got? And maybe give us a little bit of an update in terms of during this 1 year honeymoon you've had, continue your metaphor. Where do we stand? What are the new things we should be looking forward to?
Well, you know, to add what Peter talked about already, which is, you know, I think really characterized some of the reasons why we embarked on the partnership together. There's a number of alliances that you hear announced in the market that are, we're going to work together on this, or we're going to have our engineering teams collaborate on this. This is different. This is very different. There's really three main agreements that we signed together. There's a technical collaboration agreement that covers four core areas that we'll probably have Justin highlight the specifics around that have our engineering teams undertaking very significant projects around interoperability issues that Peter highlighted that we heard from customers. There was an agreement around business collaboration that encompassed really a joint go-to-market, sales, investing in proof of concepts, getting out, doing joint calls, proposals, SUSE Linux support being offered by Microsoft out to customers in the market supported by Novell was the second agreement. And the third was a patent agreement, which provides a patent covenant between our customers, which allows us really to continue the innovation work that we're doing as part of our technical collaboration agreement. So those are really the three main. So
Susan, before you go on, can I just clarify?
Yeah.
When you say a patent covenant between your customers, do you mean between your companies or between your customers?
It's for our customers.
For your customers.
From Novell to our customers. It's right. Not, and we can touch on that in a little bit more
no,
detail.
No, I just want to make sure.
It specifically is a patent covenant for the customers.
For the customers,
right.
As
correct.
Among the companies. Great. Well, we can definitely come back to it, but thank you.
Yes. So
Justin, you're up next.
What we've done is, over the last year, it's meant that we're not just developing solutions and going to market through our separate organizations. We're actually working through a dedicated sales team globally within Microsoft which Peter and myself are part of that team and spend a great deal of time, and doing joint calls with customers, understanding what their interoperability issues are. And we have, at this point, at the end of our Q3, have invoiced over $100 million in SUSE Linux to those joint customers, and we have several companies that are now a part of this program, including BMW, Renault, HSBC, Host Europe, AIG Credit Suisse, Walmart, many that I'm sure names that you would recognize, and many others, not just the very large global organizations, but other companies across France, Germany, Spain, Latin America now, in Brazil, Japan, etc. And the reason why they have moved forward with both Microsoft and Novell in partnership is because we're working with them around interoperability and around their deployments of SUSE Linux and Windows in their data center or across their environments. So that's what it's meant this past year. It's meant real customer engagement, and in addition to all of the engineering work that we're doing from a technical collaboration. So that has been very unique. It's meant bringing sales teams together that previously were competing. But what we have learned, and we've learned a lot this past year, is when we have specific customer opportunities or where they have interoperability issues, where the partnership is a fit, and we're really grounded in the customer's agenda, it is very powerful to be able to sit down and move forward in collaboration as three companies, the customer, Microsoft, and Novell. So that's what the agreement has meant this past year. A lot of customer engagement, a lot of customers signed on as part of the program. We're in very active deployment, having very successful customers that really see the value translated that we committed is very important, something we're extremely focused on as well. So we're pleased with the progress. We've had very good progress this past year, and we're looking to do more on a go-forward basis.
Excellent. Justin, you're apparently going to tell us about technical collaboration and some of the details that Susan alluded to but then left out.
Yeah, sure. So the other thing that I would add to Susan's go-to-market is, as the marketing guy, I got a whole heap load of cash to play with, because we have a $60 million joint marketing campaign between Microsoft and Novell, and I have a counterpart at Microsoft who's responsible for SUSE Linux Enterprise marketing, which is still kind of funny to me to have. He's a really good guy, and he's a really smart guy, which makes me very happy. And together we've gone off and launched a joint marketing campaign called Interopability, which is basically marketing the interoperability between SUSE Linux Enterprise and Microsoft Windows. And at the end of the day, the message is very clear to our customers. Do you want the Linux that works with Windows or the one that doesn't? And customers are voting with their wallets for the Linux that works with Windows. So when I say the Linux that works with Windows, what does that really mean? We've really called out four specific areas of interoperability between Microsoft Windows and SUSE Linux Enterprise. The first area is virtualization. As I'm sure everybody knows, virtualization is one of the hottest trends in technology right now. Basically, the ability to run multiple operating systems on one piece of hardware. And through this unique collaboration, we've enabled Microsoft Windows to be a first-class guest on top of SUSE Linux Enterprise Server, or SUSE Linux Enterprise Server is a first-class guest on top of the Microsoft Viridian hypervisor. So essentially, what you're able to do is you can pick your choice of host operating system and run SUSE Linux Enterprise and Microsoft Windows on top of that, on top of your host operating system, each with near native performance. So you really can get the performance that you need and the flexibility that you need in your data center. Because let's be perfectly honest, there are applications that are going to be run better on Windows, and there are applications that are going to run better on Linux. Now you can pick your application regardless of the operating system, and you can pick your host operating system and then put that on top of it. Now, this is one of the areas where it's really kind of unique, because guess what? Susan and I want that host operating system to be SUSE Linux Enterprise, and Peter wants that host operating system to be Microsoft Windows, and we are going to compete like heck for that sale, and we're going to duke it out just like the old days. Eventually, the customer is going to say, you know what? I have chosen to standardize on Windows or SUSE Linux, their choice. At that point, we say, okay, we respect your decision. Now, why don't you look at, how our operating systems can be guests on top of that? and we'll work together because your needs, Mr. Customer or Ms. Customer, are more important than our needs as a vendor. And let's kind of keep the customer first and foremost central. The second area that we are doing technical collaboration around is around systems management software, specifically the implementation of the WS Management Framework. So what does that really mean? That means you can use your preferred systems management tool, Microsoft System Center or Novell ZenWorks. And from either console, you can manage both Microsoft Windows and SUSE Linux Enterprise. So again, we're going to fight with Microsoft over this. Susan and I are going to try and sell you Novell ZenWorks for your systems management tool. Peter's going to try and sell you Microsoft System Center. And you can, we're going to compete on the merits of those management platforms. You make a choice at the end of the day, you can be confident that you can manage both Microsoft Windows and SUSE Linux Enterprise from your tool. So it's kind of this unique co-opetition going on here. Certainly makes sales calls quite interesting. The third area of technical collaboration that we're doing is directory and identity interoperability. As you guys all know, Microsoft has Active Directory, one of the largest directory implementations in the world, and Novell has eDirectory, which was one of the first directories ever created. And for a long time, you could use eDirectory to drive Linux resources, and you could use Active Directory to drive Windows resources, and never the two shall meet. Thanks to the technical collaboration we're doing together, you now can use Active Directory to drive a Linux server, or you can use eDirectory to drive a Windows server. Historically, you would have had, prior to this collaboration, you would have had to federate or copy information from Active Directory to eDirectory in order to use, for example, a Linux server. So every time you made a change in Active Directory, you had to copy it to eDirectory and then drive your Linux servers. Now you can just have one central directory repository. Customers have told us, you know, the virtualization stuff's great. I'm going to deploy that in 2008, 2009. The identity stuff, I'm deploying yesterday. I really want that right now. The fourth area of technical collaboration, the final area of technical collaboration, the fourth original area of technical collaboration, we've added a fifth one recently, has been around directories. Sorry, directories, has been document formats. Specifically, interoperability between the Open Document Format and Microsoft's Office Open XML. And what we've done is we've built a series of translators, one for Microsoft Office and one for OpenOffice, that enable you in OpenOffice. Obviously, the default file format is Open Document. But with this translator, you can read and save Microsoft Office Open XML files. In Microsoft Office, not surprisingly, the default file format is Office Open XML. With this translator, you can go ahead and you read Open Document format files in there. Now, the fifth area, and this is something we announced, frankly, just about 4 weeks ago, which is, again, further evidence of our technical collaboration together, has been really cool stuff. It's around the Mono and Silverlight platforms. For those of you who aren't familiar, Microsoft recently just launched a new multimedia format designed to compete with Flash called Silverlight. The Mono team, which is essentially a team of hackers at Novell who are dedicated to bringing the .NET platform to Linux, kind of went off in a corner and in a 21-day hackathon ported Silverlight to Linux and called it Moonlight. And then at one of our regularly scheduled quarterly business reviews with Microsoft, we literally had Bob Muglia in the room from Microsoft and Miguel de Casa, who is the leader of the Mono project and the lead hacker on the Moonlight project, said, "Hey, Bob, I got something I want to show you. What do you think of this?" And frankly, the look on Bob's face made the it worth going to the meeting all by itself. Because at one point, he's like, "Oh my God, I can't believe these guys are so smart they're able to do this." On the other side, he's like, "Oh my God, I can't believe they did this." And so we took a step back, and Microsoft said, "Wait a second. If we're trying to create a new standard here around Silverlight, and we can bring this to the Linux platform, and we have a partner who can help us do that, we've addressed all of the other intellectual property issues surrounding Microsoft software. We have an avenue and a venue into the open source community." We said, "Great. We went off and did this." And so suddenly, Microsoft has endorsed the Moonlight project. And so now we have Silverlight running on a Linux platform, which is pretty amazing. And that's an example of how something that was never on the drawing board a year ago when we were negotiating this project, not on anybody's radar screen, in just 9 months went from being completely conceptualized to delivered and actually delivering true customer value. So it's pretty cool stuff.
Mm, great. A true tour de force. Thank you, Justin.
What do you mean by endorsed?
Microsoft has endorsed the Moonlight platform there, saying they recommend if you want to run Silverlight on Linux, use Moonlight.
Hey, Dan, I think you've gotten an idea for your next podcast from Justin along that topic. Or the other option, I think, for you would be to record a joint sales call between Microsoft and Novell to the same party. I think that would get a lot of downloads, and not just from the Grok Law crew that usually downloads your stuff.
So Miguel DeCasa, actually, interesting, the hacker from Moonlight, is going to speak at the Microsoft Remix, Remix Conference in Boston in a couple weeks on stage in a keynote talking about Moonlight. Which I guess is probably, Dan, about as good an endorsement as you can get if Microsoft's going to put Miguel up on stage.
That's awesome. That's great. So, Carl, there have been several references, primarily by Susan and also more recently from Justin, to some of the intellectual property issues that have had to be worked out in this context. Susan referred to some patent arrangements that protect your customers. Peter also put in the context of don't make it our issue, right? There's some extent
customers
to it. Customers, yeah, exactly. So can you give us the brief tour of what the issues were going in to this from an intellectual property lawyer's perspective? And I can imagine that you may have had more than one heartburn session as you thought through all of the licenses you'd have to deal with and how you've addressed it. And maybe we'll get to the GPL type stuff afterwards, but just kind of in a from an IP lawyer's perspective, how did this thing go down?
Sure. So, as I indicated, I was at the initial start of our negotiations with Novell, and even prior to that, I was involved in some of our customer discussions. And I just want to reiterate what Peter had said was that, you know, it was consistent. Every customer that we went to was, we don't want to deal with the IP issues. Why is a customer having to deal with the IP issues? The distributor should deal with it. And the other was, we want to run heterogeneous systems. We want to be able to choose the best of breed of software, and we want to be able to run what works best for us, and we want it to run in a homogeneous type of environment. And you need to do a better job at working with the open source community and developing interop products. So those are the two key takeaways. So that was really the momentum when we started engaging with Novell, is how are we, because again, these agreements, this really, the winner between this agreement that we executed with Novell is the customers. I mean, they are clearly the winners. They got what they wanted. And so that was our goal. How can we work with, as you suggested, various licenses that are out there, put together an agreement that respects the IPs of both companies, that satisfies the customer's needs, that allows us to develop interop solutions that meet their needs. So as we started looking at the IP piece and being able to figure out how we could properly license or each other, our customers, we really ran into certain limitations that were put upon us, in particular with the GPL V2 at that time that were out there. And I'm sure many of you out here have read it and probably know it better than I do. But there are some, the way it's been written, it does restrict you on how you can put together an agreement. And Novell and Microsoft were very adamant that when we put this agreement together and structured it, we wanted to ensure that it did not run afoul of the GPL. And that was a very important piece for us, because we knew that if it did, that the repercussions would not be good. And the last thing we wanted was the Microsoft-Novell deal to blow up, you know, a month after we put it together.
Novell shared this view with you.
Yes, they did, very much. And we worked hand in hand. We finally were able to come up with a structure, as Susan alluded to, where what we do is we actually covenant not to sue each other's customers. So Microsoft covenants not to sue Novell's customers for their use of software, of Novell's software that they receive, and Novell covenants not to sue our customers. The covenants do not extend to the distributors and do not extend to Microsoft and Novell. They're directly to the customers.
So Novell could still sue you. You could still sue Novell, but you will not sue one another's customers.
That is correct. And so that's a difficult structure. You don't normally put together a cross-license or a cross-agreement where you have that. So once we decided that was a structure where we were going to go along to ensure that we were that we met the terms of the GPL, we had to figure out, well, you know, probably we're not going to sue each other, and probably we're not going to sue each other's distributors, but can we build in some incentives not to? And so that's what we did. We looked at it and said, well, what if we put in some defensive termination and put in some other clauses that really made it, you know, such that nobody really wanted to take the first shot? And, I mean, we never, you know, again, Novell and Microsoft, as you know, are very fierce competitors, and we still are competitors. We sit up here as a team talking about how we're working together. But, again, when we go out to the customers, we recommend you use Windows. I mean, that's our first thing. Use Windows. We believe that's best. However, many customers have said, we want to use Linux. And we said, great, if you want to use Linux, we recommend that you use Novell, because Novell has addressed the IP issues, and they're also working very closely with us and all our interop, and you will get a much better solution using Novell's Linux. So, and I'm kind of jumping around a little bit. We come out with the agreement, and the first thing that happened, as you probably know, if you've seen in the press, was Evan came out and said that we were in violation of the GPLv2, and we
Evan
would...
Moglen.
Pardon?
Evan Moglen.
Evan Moglen, yep. That we were in violation of GPLv2, and that he, you know, the agreement would have to be terminated. He later on, after actually understanding better how the agreement was structured, both him and Richard Stallman agreed that the structure actually does meet the requirements of the GPLv2, mm-hmm. and that it was properly structured. Such that it does not violate it, and Novell can continue to ship their software under GPLv2 without being in violation. As you know, after that time, and we can, I don't know how far you want me to go, at that time when the agreement was announced, GPLv3 was in draft form and right. was being still negotiated and amended. Soon after, there were statements made by the FSF, and in particular Evan Moglen, that they would amend GPLv3 to, quote, kill the Microsoft Novell deal. Mm-hmm. And so we've since that time, we've been having to deal with that because we want to continue to be able to do agreements like we've done with Novell with other companies. We think that this is a, you know, this is what our customers are asking for. So we would really like to continue to do further agreements, additional agreements like we've done with Novell. Fortunately, also in the GPLv3, but when it was finally finalized, it also had in a grandfathering clause for the Novell deal. So after all the talk about how that was going to be, that section at least, going to be used to kill the Novell deal, Novell-Microsoft deal is grandfathered in.
So just to be clear on the score, and I know that we probably don't want to spend too much time in the details of this back and forth, but with GPL3, the point is this deal you've done is all set. It's not nobody's going to come after you. It's grandfathered and so forth under this carve-out that we've seen. What does this portend, though, for extending the relationship here or other relationships like it that Microsoft or Novell might be seeking to do in the interop zone?
Well, GPLv3 was intentionally drafted to try to keep deals like the Microsoft and Novell deal from happening. I mean, that's no secret. That's right. been a statement out there. From my perspective, it's unfortunate. I think from the customer's perspective, it's very unfortunate. That said, we are going to continue to try to look for ways that we can continue to engage with open source companies and to work with them in a similar Novell-type deal so that we can bring solutions to our customers. You know, I've read the GPLv3 license many times. Each time I pick it up, I think I get a new understanding or new meaning on what some of the terms mean and don't mean. But we are very active in looking for continuing to work with the open source community and the distributors and to engage with them in a similar style that we've done with Novell, whatever structure that may take, and not be in violation of the GPLv3 or V2 or any other open source license, but to be able to bring the solutions to the customers and meet their needs.
Great. So shifting just slightly to the impact of this arrangement, the particular Microsoft Novell arrangement, I wonder if both sides wouldn't mind commenting on the impact on sales. Has this been something that's driven sales? Is this something that has cost either of you a bit? How do you view the 1 year on impact on revenues?
Why don't I start?
I'll give you one statistic. I'll give one statistic and then have some color.
Why don't you start?
I'll give you the statistic. For Duvall's first three quarters of our fiscal year, we're on a fiscal year that ends October 31st, our Linux business was up 243% year over year.
Huh.
That's a statistic from our Q3 reporting numbers.
And how much of that do you attribute to this arrangement, that growth?
I think it's kind of – part of it is obviously directly because Susan said we've invoiced more than $100 million through our Microsoft relationship. But I also think, frankly, there's a significant halo effect of this deal. When we're out there competing with Red Hat, people are saying – we can say, hey, our Linux is recommended by Microsoft. And customers go, I do have a Windows investment. Seems to make good sense to pick the Linux that works with Windows. But I'm going to let Susan comment on the actual data because she's running sales. That's one to get the 243% number out because it grounds it.
Yeah, I think Carl characterized it well that if the customer is moving to Linux or where they see a dual OS strategy with Windows and Linux in their data center, then it's beneficial for us to work together because typically the customer with that strategy really is looking for the interoperability between those platforms. So in working, for example, with BMW, they were very clear with both of us that they had a dual OS strategy for their data center. They were undergoing major consolidation of their data center. It was a critical aspect of their overall technology and direction. And being able to sit at the table together with BMW and address the specific interoperability and have Linux working with Windows and the ability to both today and in the future leverage virtualization was very attractive to them. So there's been a very positive uptake in terms of sales. It also creates opportunities from what we've seen, and I'll definitely have Peter comment as well, around other conversations that we're having with customers. It leads directly into how can we best manage this environment? You know, can you work with us on we have a big investment in Active Directory. We want to be able to manage provisioning of our Linux environment the same way off of Active Directory that we do of our Microsoft Windows environment. How can we work together there? So it leads to additional conversations and work that we're doing with these companies, especially for large-scale deployments where they need help not only in implementing and consolidating on the data center side, but it goes right to the heart of managing those environments, deploying those environments, securing those environments, and really making sure that they can execute on that strategy. There's very few companies that you talk to today that don't have a major data center initiative underway. Mm-hmm. Or that are not looking at systems management, consolidation of platforms. Mm-hmm. Trying to simplify really takes some of the complexity out, and that means us solving that complexity on their behalf and being able to deliver that. So those additional conversations may mean that, as Justin characterized, that we may compete for other opportunities that are triggered from their strategy to move forward with Windows and SUSE Linux. And we do that, but in the end, we're working together to figure out, you know, what is the right way forward. So it has created additional business opportunities for both companies. Mm. We're approaching now, over the next month or so here with our anniversary coming up on November 2nd, we're going to be approaching, the 100 customer mark easily on a global basis, with many of those being very large-scale deployments. You'll see that number continue to ramp up. It has through the year in terms of the number of customers that are signing on. Some are just starting with, 50 servers with one divisional deployment and then ramping that up as they go. That means
just
incremental.
To be clear, with those 100, what are they doing? They're buying at least one server provisioned in this way. How do you count it?
Oh, typically it's more than.
No, I understand, but just to get on that list of 100, what does that mean?
That means that they are they're taking a SUSE Linux subscription for a 1 year or 3 year period, and they're deploying that within their environment and starting to implement some of the technologies around the interoperability and collaboration that we're working on, and then we're working with them clearly to make sure that we've got a successful customer that's deploying that technology. Okay. So that would be one of the 100. but we're seeing that number ramp up as we go as well, just because we started out in the U.S. and the U.K. and Germany, mm-hmm. and we've expanded into Asia-Pacific, we've expanded into other markets in Latin America, and we've also expanded our reach. When we started out the year, we had a team of 5 people, Peter, globally dedicated full-time, just focusing within Microsoft on our Novell partnership, obviously the broader field within Novell as well, and that team is now over 4 times, 400% larger, so about 21-24 people. So it's a bigger team now, and great. We're generating a lot more activity, customer engagement.
So, Peter, let me ask the same question to you, but slightly differently,
okay.
which is to say, being slightly impish, it's obvious to me and perhaps to others in the room why this is a good idea for Novell to have entered into this partnership. Mm-hmm. You know, relative size, kind of penetration of the market, various things that, you know, one could see how this would drive 243% growth for them. It's frankly less obvious to me that Microsoft, given your position in the market, historical statements around some of these things, why you would have done this and why this deal makes sense for you.
Sure.
So maybe in talking as specifically as you can about the impact in terms of mm-hmm. revenue and so forth, why?
Absolutely, and I get that question quite a bit. And the way I like to answer that question, really, there's a tangible quantitative answer as well as an intangible strategic. And so I'll address the question in both. But let me go to the tangible first. Tangibly, we think that there's a great revenue opportunity for the virtualization solution. I mean, we know that, Mark, like you had mentioned before, it's a hot technology, it's growing, and we think this is really going to position Microsoft very well and our account teams to have very meaningful discussion around selling virtualization solutions via the Longhorn server, and hopefully this will help drive Longhorn server to help, you know, in terms of host the virtualization platform. Okay, so that's a tangible, you know, objective that we think we're going to see some benefit from in the long term. The intangible, which is interesting, and it wasn't part of any sales plan, it wasn't documented in terms of how we're going forward, it sort of morphed, very similar to what you talked about, Moonlight, was the strategic impact that our account teams on the ground are benefiting from this agreement. And it was sort of looming. We kind of thought there may have been some strategic. But what do I mean by that? I mean, when the Walmart Microsoft account rep, you know, was in talking to Walmart about Windows solutions or whatever, you know, that person is absolutely kept in a silo and not talking to the Unix folks, not allowed to talk to the Linux folks, and frankly, the Linux folks don't want to talk to the Microsoft account team. So we sign our enterprise agreements, and we sell Windows, and we sell Office, and we sell Microsoft Server. What this agreement allows our on-the-feet strategic account managers the opportunity to do is to really break that barrier and bring value now and value discussions to folks in these accounts that they would never, ever be able to talk to. I'm not at liberty to mention the customer name because it's a current engagement, but there's a large financial institution right now doing a refresh in their branches, and they were adamant this is not going to be a Windows solution. And they're a big customer for Microsoft. It's going to be a Linux solution. 2 or 3 years ago, that was the end of that. I mean, great, no problem. You know, let's go focus on CRM or something. But today, the account manager said, great. Totally understand that's the right thing for you to do. Let's engage Novell. Let's make a joint call and share with you what we can do economically, technically, a proof of concept. Well, that person now has sparked up relationships with the CIO of a very important division. That CIO and that group is viewing Microsoft differently, and it's helping her close her traditional business, Windows Office, because they're seeing more value now that they're going to get from the interoperability built into server product, Office product, and the desktop. So I go back to the just to summarize, there's a tangible benefit. We think that the virtualization marketplace is something that we're going to see good revenue and help drive Longhorn Server. But also, as this relationship has morphed, we're seeing opportunities in our reps talking and being involved with the Unix and Linux space where we never were involved before.
So just to push it slightly further, can you say that Microsoft has generated more revenue than you would have without this agreement in the last year, or not prepared to say that?
I'm not prepared to say that yet. Mm-hmm.
declare victory later.
But we're declaring victory in terms of the partnership and the objective set for the partnership. Absolutely going to declare a victory there just in terms of the customer list.
Great.
Absolutely going to declare a victory in terms of the discussions that we're having, you know, that we weren't having before. And I'm very confident, very, very confident, if we keep doing the right things, keep working together really closely, we will declare a victory in terms of virtualization and having a good virtualization solution.
Short by Carl, and then Andy up to Grove, okay. And we'll open the floodgates from there.
Yeah, very quick. The one thing that we've done very well as a team is really define what is the set of customer problems or opportunities that makes sense for us to engage jointly on. And we very quickly will qualify out an opportunity that doesn't fit with our program. The obvious one, it involves a heavy desktop deployment, where clearly we're going to be competitive, where you know, where it's not clear that they've made a decision and Windows and Linux will be competing for the platform. So in those cases, we have a very direct dialogue and open communication between our dedicated teams, not the broader field, but our dedicated team, and we take a look at the opportunity and say, you know, this doesn't fit, it's going to be competitive. You know, we'll help individually support our account teams, but it isn't part of this partnership that can leverage the technology. Let's step back and let the account teams go and compete on the opportunities. So we've really tightened down how we qualify, and the good news is it is very opportune. The opportunities are a lot, and we have been able to partner on a great deal where it doesn't fit with the program and it's not going to have the right value to Microsoft or the right value back to Novell. We qualify that out very quickly because in the end, it's not going to benefit the customer. Oh. So that process has helped a lot.
Great. Carl, then Andy, and then Kirk.
Yeah, just to follow on what Peter and Susan have been saying, one area that we definitely can claim victory in is our relationship with our customers. We are now listening to what they want and addressing what their needs are. Not that we weren't before.
That was the pregnant negative there.
I think every company needs to do it better. Anyone can do it better. But it's very easy to go off and start developing your software thinking you know what the customer's needs and what they want. We have now opened up negotiations and discussions with our customers. We are listening to what they want, and we are fulfilling their needs. And I think that our relationships with our customers have really grown. And that is ultimately where the end game is going to be. When you satisfy your customers' needs, they're going to be willing to do to be potentially even pay a little bit more if it need be, but to satisfy the solutions and to bring the opportunities and the environment that they want. So that is truly a victory that we've gotten through this.
That could be the real man bites dog story. Large software company actually listens to its customers, right? Andy, then Kurt, and if you wouldn't mind, and then Karen, and if you wouldn't mind just saying who you are for the podcast listeners out there, that would be great.
Andy Updegrove, Gesmer Updegrove. I guess in this context, I should also say I work with the Linux Foundation as well. I'm curious, you're both public companies, so there's only so much you can, you know, answer something like this. But when you look just at the Novell Linux numbers, since the agreement was signed, there was a big spike, and then a drop, and then sales leveled off for several quarters. As I sit here and listen, it's a wonderful story, you know, to tell a customer, you know, that wants to run a homogeneous environment. Is this just a long sales cycle that's going to take time to go back up again, or what should the marketplace be interpreting from the, you know, rather level quarters that Novell has been showing since the initial spike in sales? What do you make of how the marketplace is reacting to the message that you're delivering, or to any other, you know, factors that might be influencing them?
Well, why don't I start with that? One, we believe that we saw pent-up demand from the outset of the agreement for customers that both companies had already been actively engaging with, where there was not the partnership in place. So there was a level of having some pent-up demand that occurred initially after the signing of the agreement. And when we just what really happened, we literally just sat down together the Monday after we signed the partnership, myself and Susan Hauser and our team, and we said, well, you know, we could wait till we have all perfect roadmaps, and we could wait till We have all of our collateral done and our website up. We said, you know, let's just get out there and start talking to customers. And that's what we did. We got literally went straight out. Peter, many of our team around the globe, it was a small team, and we started talking with customers. We did see some pent-up demand, and there were a number of customers that said, this is exactly what I need. I'm just about to go down this path. And they were prepared to make some fairly sizable commitments based on their deployments, and we announced a number of those in a whole series of press releases that occurred over that period of time. Since then, we've expanded to a number of other markets, and we're continuing to see above market growth year on year, and that clearly has resulted in the 243% that Justin alluded to in terms of SUSE Linux. So we're continuing to see strong demand for the platform and very strong interest in terms of what the partnership and the interoperability enables them to be able to do in their environments. What you will see is our focus is not just a small number of large customers. Our focus is to have a larger and large number of joint customers. So our objective as we go into next year and as we've progressed through this year is not only capturing some of the very large customers that have signed on and are actively deploying, but also some in the mid-market, large enterprise, some hosters as well. So you'll continue to see the numbers of customers that we're announcing grow where it's not just one large global announcement. We'll still have those, but it's, you know, 20 customers signed up. Here's the list of the customers, and here's their quotes. So you'll see that level of momentum.
So, Andy, did you get an answer?
The only thing I would add is, and Andy said, you know, he's seen the growth leveling off, and, you know, we're in our investor, our public statements every quarter, we report our Linux invoicing growth, and our first quarter was 659% year-over-year growth. The second quarter was 114% year-over-year growth, and the third quarter was 97% year-over-year growth. If we keep reporting growth to those ridiculous numbers, I wouldn't call that leveling off. I'd be quite happy with that.
We're happy with the progress.
Short follow on, Andy, or are you good?
Yeah, no, I was just curious. I'm not, you know, suggesting any answers, just that there's been a lot of speculation, yeah, you know, since the quarter came out. And that's fine. You know, it's certainly the spike makes eminent sense in the beginning, and we're talking about long sales cycles and new concepts going into the marketplace. It hasn't really been a very long period of time, right, you know, so far. We're only looking at a few quarters, so thank you.
Great. So, Kurt, tell us who you are.
I'm Kent Bradford. Kent's from a small software company called SoftCheck. The question comes really more from being 40 years in the software business. You've talked about winners, your customers, Microsoft, Novell. When there's a winner, there's always a loser. Who, from Novell's and Microsoft's perspective, are the losers as a result of the partnership?
Hey, Peter,
you know, that's it.
Great. I don't think it's as black and white as winners and losers. I mean, I really don't.
Where's the competitive advantage then vis-a-vis the competition? I guess maybe that's a loser has a bad connotation.
Yeah.
Where's the competitive advantage?
Yeah.
Who gets competitive disadvantage from your competitive advantage?
Well, I think clearly, you know, I think clearly we have that competitive advantage now because of the partnership. There's no question. You know, other companies out there have their own competitive advantage for certain areas and certain programs and certain, you know, technologies that they offer. But I don't think there's a direct, you know, I can't point to another distribution. I can't point to another commercial software company and say in the black and white area there's a complete disadvantage. But I would say that, you know, other companies competing against us may be in a disadvantage, clearly because of, you know, what we're offering from the partnership. I just don't want to go out and say, you know, directly that distribution absolutely is the loser, because I want to be.
Yeah, I would add a little bit more color.
Please do.
We clearly compete with other Linux distributions on opportunities, and we compete with Red Hat on opportunities, and because of the interoperability, we have one business because of the partnership and the interoperability where they've selected SUSE Linux, not only for technical reasons, but because of the interoperability. and support and all the other things that go around it. It's not just a pure, there's multiple facets to these decisions, as you would know. So, you know, there are, I would never characterize it as losers, but we are, based on our growth, gaining market share in the Linux platforms based on the success that we've had this past year and based on what we're enabling based on the partnership that we have. So that these situations are competitive.
So Kent's question is a great one. I think one thing that would be interesting to watch would be each of you presumably have companies against whom you compete primarily, and it would be interesting to see relative to whose competitors did this end up resulting in greater advantage. But
the other competitive question, you mentioned customers, and you listed about six major worldwide names. Five of the six were European. I'm curious whether Walmart being the only U.S.-based company you mentioned.
Oh, I can list more.
I'm just curious whether the distribution is heavily skewed.
I was in Europe last week. Yeah.
You know, that's a great...
That's an easy question. Very short, Peter, and then I want to get to Karen.
Yeah, but real quickly, I mean, companies like Credit Suisse, Deutsche Bank in New York, AIG, Nationwide, you know, is another.
LexisNexis. Gordon
Foods, a small little food distributor. Actually, they're
California Department of Fish and Game.
Right.
That's great. Yeah.
California
Department of Fish and Game.
Frizicom.
High Five
Network.
High Five, Overstock.com.
We've got lots of good examples.
Okay. Yeah.
We're going to push on.
Great questions, thank you.
We've got several stacked up here. Karen.
I'm Karen Copenhaver. I'm from Choate Hall Stewart. I also work with the Linux Foundation. I think this question is for Justin. You mentioned Miguel Picasa, who I think of as a national treasure, and I realize I might have to say North American treasure. But I don't think you've told the story of your relationship, you know, with the open source community, because Miguel and Nat in the beginning were a little uncomfortable. And clearly, from the story you told, which I loved, you know, they've grown comfortable with this relationship. And I don't think you've told that part of the story yet.
Sure. A relationship with the open source community on the Microsoft Novell deal has been, frankly, up and down a little bit. I think it was down at the very beginning, because I think a lot of people really didn't understand what the deal meant, and they thought, let's be perfectly honest, people have an emotional reaction to the word Microsoft. They hear Microsoft, and they immediately think, oh my God, they did a deal with Microsoft, they must be doing something bad. And they, you know, they started from that point. And, you know, there's been a lot of tension between Microsoft and open source over the years, and Microsoft has done its fair share of saber rattling. So the initial reaction was, well, what did Novell just do? They must have sold us down the river. But what we've been able to do through a lot of dialogue, a lot of forums, and I've been out there speaking to open source groups around the world for the better part of a year now, Miguel has been writing up a storm on his blog. And we've participated in internet relay chats. We've been in, had town hall meetings, both at SUSE Labs in Nuremberg, as well as other locations around the world. We sat down and had a conversation just like what we had today and said, look, this isn't about, you know, anything doing anything bad for Linux. This is about helping to grow the Linux market. Because let's take a step back, gang. What do we want to do as a Linux and open source community? We want to promote the growth of Linux. We can turn to you and say, Novell's Linux business is growing thanks to our deal with Microsoft. This is a good thing for Linux. We're getting Linux into places where it never was before. Walmart being a great example, I had the privilege of sitting on the phone with the CTO of Walmart when she was doing all her press briefings. And she said, I wasn't putting Linux in Walmart until Steve said it was okay. Steve being Steve Ballmer. And Steve Ballmer said SUSE Linux was okay for her to put in. So we're able to turn to the open source community and say, hey guys, we got Linux into Walmart. That's pretty dang good. They also started to see through some of the technical collaboration and through some of the great work that the Microsoft Open Source Research Lab has been doing. That's their lab run by Bill Hilf and Sam Ramji. They've done a lot of outreach, and they said, oh, so all this virtualization work that Microsoft and Novell are doing, there's going to be some code contributions back to the open source community. That seems like a pretty good thing. This translator between Open Document Format and OpenOffice XML going to help promote the Open Document Format. That seems like a pretty good thing. Oh, Microsoft's actually going to work with us on Moonlight. That seems like a pretty good thing. And so I wouldn't say necessarily the open source community has embraced this deal with open arms. But I think we've gotten to the point now where they're cautiously optimistic. I don't want to speak on behalf of the community. You never can speak on behalf of the community. That's just Justin's opinion. Based on many conversations, I'd say the bulk of people are cautiously optimistic that this thing may actually portend quite well for the open source community.
Great. We'll push along. But Karen, was that responsive?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Sir?
Hi, I'm Gard Little from IDC, and I wanted to ask you about the following scenario. You've all talked about choice, customer choice, and wanting to honor that. And is there anything in your agreements or strategy to deal with situations where a customer is choosing another Linux distribution, for example, Red Hat? Where you draw the line in terms of either trying to alter that decision or alternatively to offer services, integration, or consulting around trying to make that distribution work? So how does the agreement or strategy work when the choice falls another way?
Peter?
Yeah.
Sounds like a Microsoft question.
In that situation, it's really a block and tackle, sales engagement in terms of proposing to the customer and partnering with Novell to say, here are the technical benefits, here are the reasons why the SUSE distribution makes more sense technically from what you're trying to do, but also bringing in what we're doing with the partnership, the covenant not to sue, which is a real added value, what we're doing from the tech collab component, but also potential pricing. Part of the business agreement that we have, are the support certificates, and how can we structure a financial deal that makes sense for you? So if there's a competitive battle, in an account, and it looks like a Red Hat or something else, we will actually jointly, hand in hand, joint sales calls, joint marketing, joint technical, and do like you would do in the software industry anywhere. Do a proof of concept, get people in the lab, and then structure a financial deal that could make sense. So it's really that simple.
If the decision were made to use some other distribution, would you offer any support services for some other distributions, and integration or consulting around that if a customer were to make another selection?
Yeah. So again, we did this. This agreement is all about the Microsoft and Novell relationship. Right? We work with them to satisfy the customer's needs in the asset they've had. If another company, such as a Red Hat or others, would like to work with us, we have an open door policy. We would happily go to the table and work with them. Today, we have not, unfortunately, been able to do that. But if they so choose to come knock on our door and be willing to engage with us, we would be happy to engage with them so that we could do similar agreements, execution of agreements with them. So we have a very open door policy here. We did this, Novell took a huge leap being the first out the door to do it. They hats off to them. Fortunately, it's turned out how we had hoped. But I do think it's opened the doors for others to follow. As you know, Zandros and Linspire have also signed agreements with us, and we've had several others who have signed licensing agreements with us. We have an open door policy. We're willing to work with anyone. And should a Red Hat choose to come work with us, I'm sure we could work some type of agreement that would be beneficial to both companies.
Great question. So read into this that there's not exclusivity in this relationship, but rather a further invitation to others to participate.
No. I mean, this agreement is all about the Microsoft-Novell relationship and how we're working together, but there is in no way does that limit us from working with another company. The same with Novell.
Yeah, the one, completely agree. The technical collaboration and the work that we're doing, while it's going to benefit broader market, open source, it's also work that we have well underway that clearly is going to deliver some strong capabilities to customers that isn't available on other Linux platforms. So there's some real heavy engineering work that this agreement undertakes that may or may not be part of others, but it's there today and we're very committed to it.
Great. Scott. And then.
My name is Scott Southworth. I'm a patent attorney. So I was interested in the covenant not to sue. I understand it's in the context of a mutually beneficial alliance. I'm just interested in a little more of the detail about how that's set up or how that might work.
So I don't know if you've actually seen the documents that actually were filed, publicly filed, I believe in Novell's filings back in May, was it? So the documents, they are out there. Again, one of the struggles we had was to ensure that the structure that we put together would not violate any of the open source licenses that were being used for distribution of the software. So the structure is that the covenants are posted up on each other's websites. Microsoft has a posting that is the covenant not to sue the Novell's customers for use of the Novell software that they receive for revenue. And Novell has the same posting up there. So it's a direct covenant to each other's customers. There's nothing, and it's for their own use. That's how we were able to comply with the GPL v3. There's nothing that's going to a distributor, giving them rights that they can't pass downstream. And what we've done is, with Novell and Microsoft, what we've each done is put in some additional terms, incentives, for us not to blow up the deal. I mean, neither one of us want to blow up the deal, but then we each gave each other a little more security that if you take the first shot, it's not going to necessarily be in your best interest.
Well, and to the, you know, to the credit, really, of the joint team that put this together, while IP assurance is a consideration of many of our customers, not all of them, it's definitely one of the considerations, they've been very pleased with what's been provided. We typically don't have any issues or questions really come up. They review the covenant, and it's been a benefit and value in our sales and in our business. Mm. So to the credit of the team, it's really been very well received.
Great. And for further bedtime reading, the May filings may have more detail on this.
Hi, Jerry Katsky, independent software consultant. Just maybe a clarification. So the software enhancements that Novell has made to permit it to run better with the Microsoft environment, have those enhancements been introduced into the Linux open source community, or are those proprietary enhancements?
So any code changes, obviously when you're doing bidirectional virtualization or when you're running Windows as a guest on top of SUSE, you're going to need to make some modifications to Windows code, and you're going to need to make some modifications to SUSE code. Any modifications that are being made to the SUSE code are going to be released back to the open source community. Any modifications that are made to the Windows code, that will be Microsoft's decision to do. One might suspect, considering they haven't released any of the other Windows code to open source, it's probably not going to be released. But anything that Novell does around SUSE Linux code will be open sourced again.
So the implication of that is that Red Hat, if they chose to do so, could take advantage of those enhancements.
Correct.
And then be in a similar position in terms of the level of compatibility with Microsoft.
Well, if there's one big differentiator, and that is who's going to take the phone call. If you are running Windows as a virtual guest on top of SUSE Linux Enterprise Server and you call for technical support, Microsoft will take the call and they will help you. If you're running Microsoft Windows as a virtual guest on top of Red Hat using the Xen contributions that Novell and Microsoft have made, Microsoft will ask you to recreate the problem in a non-virtualized environment before they will help you. And so that is a major differentiator. Basically, it's the fact that not only are we delivering code to the customer, but we're standing behind it together. That we'll take your call, and if we need to, we'll get Microsoft tech support on the phone and Novell tech support on the phone and the customer for a three-way conference call and resolve this issue together. And that's something that we can uniquely provide to the customer.
Other questions from the floor? I've got a fair few other lines of questioning for the group, but yeah, Frank.
Frank Curran from Black Duck Software. I understand you're going after the large, you know, global 1,000s, but it would seem that the small to mid-sized market, I think, Susan, you started to say something about
Absolutely.
It. I think, you know, that's an opportunity. And are you hearing that from your customers? And are those targeted customers?
We definitely are targeting the mid-market, you know, the mid-sized enterprise to large enterprise as well. And actually, a number of the companies that we mentioned, Prisicom, you know, SaveMart would be probably above that. But there's been a good handful, probably 30-plus, that I would characterize as not your large globals. that are already part of the program, and there was a multi-customer release that we did back in the spring that actually listed a lot of these. There's a lot in the Americas, in the U.S., as well as in Europe, and we definitely are continuing there. We also announced a Lighthouse program with Dell,
right?
And that program is in partnership between Dell, Novell, and Microsoft to provide really a total solution out to customers where they're looking for hardware support, SUSE Linux, and want to take advantage of the work that we're doing together, the tech collab that we're doing. So Dell is also working in the market with enterprise and some mid-market size companies. We do foresee additional partnerships. Our first out of the gate few quarters here, we really wanted to focus in the first 6 months in getting off the ground, getting our learning, winning a number of customers, getting them off the ground and successful, and then expand to some other partnerships that we'll work with in a lighthouse approach, which means it's a very targeted approach. And you will continue to see more of those partnerships around the globe. Not a huge number, but more of those partnerships where we believe that the partner will really, where we hear customer demand for a partner to really work with us and support that customer locally. So you will see a handful more partnerships, and you'll also see us continuing to target the mid-market as well.
Peter, brief follow, and then I want to go to Dan Bricklin.
Very, very briefly. You know, you're spot on about that marketplace. It's a matter of scale. You know, this is not a discussion or not a discussion that you can't have a mass programmatic approach with just a handout. You really have to sit and have dialogue and explain, you know, what the partnership's about and what. So it's a matter of scaling up and getting feet on the street, partners on the street, and having that dialogue one-to-one, one-to-many, and that's the phase we're in right now. Just to add that.
Dan Bricklin, you've been holding the mic and all the equipment so far, but you are also one of the most important commentators on this set of issues. So
let's see. It's a little hard to use a mic like this so close. Microsoft has... has this feeling that how do you make software on, make money on open source? You have to be in proprietary. Now that you're actually close to the proprietary business to some extent, have you learned anything about how one makes money in the open source world and whether that might change some of how Microsoft approaches what they do? Because there are clearly advantages to open source in development, and there's clearly a desire by many of your customers, else you wouldn't have done this.
Yeah. No, I think that's a wonderful, wonderful question, and I think one of the areas.
What have you told Steve?
Well, you know, here's the reality. Yeah,
Craig.
Yeah, that's right.
And now, also all of the GrokCloud listeners.
You know, the reality is when you're walking the annals of Redmond and you're really going to talk to the engineers, you know, they step back and say, "Wow, what a community! What a great way to get feedback! This will help software development, help me develop software." That's legitimate. I mean, it really, really, really is. And I think, you know, we've realized there's some darn good things coming out of the open source model, and darn good things coming out of the open source community. How do you make money? A couple of ways. One, you make our software better because we're getting more feedback and maybe bringing in some of the models that the open source community has put together in terms of developing software. That's going to help us make better software. But two, it's the interoperability solutions that Justin's team's working on at Novell and embedding that into Windows, embedding that into Office. We think we're going to sell more Windows and sell more Office, specifically.
They're making money.
Carl, I don't know if you want to add.
The thing is, they're making money selling open source. Are you learning anything about how you could be money so that you could have open source that way, too?
Well, sure, Peter. I'll take a shot at this. So one is, and actually I think Novell's making money on not selling open source, but giving it away and on services. So that is a model. That is definitely a model, and it's a model that we also consider. We are also investigating, you know, what kind of services Microsoft can provide. There's definitely opportunities, and every day we hire new engineers coming in from all these great universities, even from this area, and many of them have been using Linux and others open source products for years because it's a great environment for learning. I was an engineer. I'm computer science major, and I know that hands-on and having the code and being able to do that. They're coming into our company, and they're having some great ideas. They're using software that they know, and we're having some very frank discussions on, you know, the open source is here. It's not going away. You know, how are we going to work together? Novell agreement was a first step of how are we going to work with the open source community. And now it's, you know, how are we also going to continue as a company to make money, to meet our customers' needs, to continue to make profits? And, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. We're a business. At the bottom line, our stockholders want us to make money. And we are looking at the open source development model, the use of it. How can we incorporate that, and how can we use it? How can we use it inside our business? And what are the opportunities that we can give back to the community? Because I think that that's really all about the community. The community is, when I hear, one of the things that I hear that upsets the community is somebody who basically just takes advantage, you know, takes the stuff in and doesn't give back. So as Peter alluded to, we have a Linux Compete Lab, a Linux lab that's got thousands of Linux servers. We're the largest Linux server farm, I think, west of the Rockies. We are developing code, learning how to use it, how to interact with it, and trying to determine what the other opportunities we have. You know, do we have all the answers today? No. Are we learning? Yes.
Office for Linux?
Office for Linux? Who knows? You know, isn't an office for Linux. Right now, there's open office for Linux, and we are working right now with the file formats to be able to at least bridge that gap that's there.
Yeah, and I think that's a first step. You know, clearly we're in the infancy here, Dan and others. But, you know, supporting ODF, that was a religious battle back in Redmond. I mean, it really was. But, you know, the feedback that we're getting from state and local governments and from bids that we're now putting out there for Office, they're saying, okay, you know, I see there's a premium here for Office. I might not use PowerPoint, but I'm going to pay for it because I like the ODF converter. You know, and so that has helped us to make.
Could it become a native format or one that without a converter?
I don't know. I'm not an engineer. I'm not making those decisions. And if I had the answer, I'd share it with you. I honestly don't know.
It's a marketing decision.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in the end, we're both public companies with shareholders, but what we've learned and what we continue to learn is there are potential for other projects that we may undertake, but in the end, if we're solving customers' problems, it's creating opportunity. Because it's a mixed source world out there.
I would love to ask just a different and open question. Is there anybody here who's actually a customer of these companies in this context? So is it an invitation? Not really?
We'll be standing outside the door as you exit. Yeah.
It wasn't about trying to make sales, but rather just to get a reality check of whether or not people
question.
Have been doing. Andy.
Yeah.
Question regarding the Fortune article that came out a few months ago and the reference to 235 patents that would be allegedly infringed by specifically Linux, OpenOffice, open source, email, and quote-unquote, other open-source software. My question relates to what the message is. One interpretation of it is, that sounds like tomorrow's Linux desktop. And also, you know, why focus on OpenOffice specifically? I mean, clearly some of the patents might be uniquely infringed by OpenOffice, but they might also be infringed by other ODF, compliant software. So I guess I'm ignoring all the later back and forth on what the intentions are, what was the message that Microsoft was trying to deliver about that particular bundle of patents associated with this particular bundle of software? What's the customer supposed to hear from that? And that's really a Microsoft question.
Carl can
address that. So you're referring to the Fortune article that came out back in, I think, the April, May timeframe. What's that?
First of all, Microsoft has a huge patent portfolio, as you know. Thousands and thousands of patents. And when you look at products and analyze them against patents, as you know, that is a very time-consuming, tedious task. It isn't something that you just kind of, you know, go through. I did an opinion on 20,000 or 2,000 patents today. So when you start looking at products, and this I'm addressing why was it the Linux, why was it the OpenOffice, if you're going to start looking at products and see where your patents, what products they're covering, and let me tell you, we don't only do that with open source. I think with most companies that are out there who have a strategic patent portfolio, they're analyzing where do your patents, what do they cover, what technologies are they in. When you go into a cross-license deal, you need to know, you know, where you stand as far as another company and what they may have. So when you start to look at a patent portfolio as large as Microsoft's, you first have to look at, okay, well what software are we going to look at and compare it to see how it works? We've got a program that kind of does a high-level index that says, well, these patents are in this area, these patents are in this area, but that's not really going to get you any. That's going to get you to help you to narrow the scope of what you might have. So what we did was we identified a few products that were out there, and we said, okay, well, let's look and see what we've got. And we've got, you know, thousands of patents. Let's start looking at the products, and some of the, we looked, obviously, some of the bigger ones that were out there, the Linux, the OpenOffice, and those. And as you know, with open source, it makes it a little easier to try to figure out if a patent happens to read on top of a product or not. And we did our analysis. So we stepped through it and we said, hey, here's our patents that we have here, and they happen to read on what's in this component of this product, this component of this product. And as I said, we do that not only with open source, we do that with other companies that have proprietary environments also. The customer, I mean, what really comes out of that is I believe what it shows is that Microsoft is someone who is very inventive. You know, we are out there spending $7-8 billion a year on R&D to develop our software and to patent our inventions. And so my take from that is, sure, we've got patents that cover these products. One of the readings for me is that shows that, sure, we were in that industry and in that technology. We've been in there for a long time. We've developed products. We've developed inventions, and we've patented those inventions. Those inventions of now are in other products that are out there. And so it was an analysis of saying, okay, what other products are out there that would happen to be reading on our patents? It also gives value to the Novell deal for the customers. If I was a customer, I'd say, well, it's a good thing I'm using Novell's SUSE Linux, because there's a chance if you got 235 patents out there, even if you are, you know, very optimistic that you're going to say that, say that they're invalid or non-infringed, you know, a high percentage of them, there's always going to be, you're not going to get around all of them. We all know that. Microsoft knows that. We've been sued plenty of times. So if I was a customer, I'd say, well, that really just confirms what the value I'm getting from taking my SUSE Linux. I'm actually getting patent coverage because Microsoft does have patents in these areas. And now in addition to all the interop solutions, I'm getting the coverage that they claim that they're also providing in the cross covenant. So I think the message was out there is Microsoft is inventive. We have patents that are covering products, and we are willing to work with others in the industry to do similar solutions. I'm going to say it's exactly the same as the Novell deal, but similar solutions with them. Mm-hmm.
Great. So we're more or less at the 10-minute mark. I wanted to try to bring it in for landing a little bit, but returning to the theme of interoperability, this is something that both of the companies here have talked a lot about, customers and others have been talking about in this context. We've been spending a year at the Berkman Center thinking about what interoperability really means. Like, why do we care about interoperability? So it, for its own sake, is kind of like openness or apple pie, right? It's good. We like it. But why? So that's sort of one line of reasoning. And the second is, you know, there's a controversy about how you get to interoperability. Some people will say the only way to get to true interoperability is open standards, processes, and so forth. So there are multiple views as to what it means to get to interoperability. This, I think you guys have made a strong case that two firms here can collaborate in a specific way as to achieve a certain amount of interoperability in a context that's good for customers. But I wonder if, giving you each a chance at a last word here, you might comment on this interoperability question and how to get there and what you've learned from this experience. And if there's anything that has not been said that you wish to say, this would be your chance. But we've got maybe sort of two-ish minutes per person. So maybe since we started with Justin last time, we'll start with Carl and go down this way, and Justin will get the last word.
Okay. Well, I'll make it quick. Oh, I'm sorry. My view is that there are a couple of ways to get to interop solutions. Standards is one, and I think it's a very good way of developing interoperable solutions in the standards arena. Microsoft's in hundreds of standards organizations and works with many companies to develop standards for interop. But that's not the only way to develop a standard. For example, our agreement with Novell, our engagement with Novell, I would be very surprised if we don't come out with some solutions that will end ultimately be some type of standard, interoperability standard between us. We have worked with companies. We've worked, just for example, the web services. We've been in that area for years. IBM was one of our biggest partners that we had worked with them to develop specifications that were interop solutions. Ultimately, some of them even got pushed, put into standards organizations. There are also proprietary standards that are out there that are that solve interop solutions developed by a single company, so interoperability can come in a number of different forms, and standards is one way. Collaboration between one or two companies with one or two other companies, and even individual companies, PDF, Adobe, that's a standard. And its interoperability is available there with that. So,
Susan, final words.
Hey, when we talk with customers, it doesn't tend to be typically a holistic view and debate around interoperability. It's typically about their biggest pain point, what they're being hammered on every day, the problem they're having in their environment. So it really, what bubbles to the top is their issues. And sometimes that's something we're addressing in the tech collab that we're doing with Microsoft. And they say, great, I can leverage that. Other times, they want to put it on our list as something that, hey, while both of you are here at the table, we'd like to go and tackle this issue. This is my biggest pain point. If you can solve this, it's big for me. So that's what we're listening for. We're learning a lot. Our technical teams are collaborating. We're going to deliver the commitments we made out to customers in the market first, but as Justin highlighted, there's already some other areas that we're working on together. And we have some large customers and mid-sized customers that have put some more things on our list to take a look at through this partnership, which is exactly what we had hoped would happen, is that they would really see the work that we're doing together and want to expand that. So we're going to continue to learn and listen. We've had a great first year. I want to applaud and I can tell you the partnership and the work that we've been doing between the two companies, we've just got a great, open, very direct relationship, even though we may compete in certain cases. So it's been a fabulous start. We're still learning. Look for some very good things from the partnership next year. Look for some potential areas that we're going to collaborate some more on. We don't know what those are yet, but we certainly have a good list coming from customer engagement. And look for some more momentum in the marketplace in terms of what we're doing. We can't believe it's almost a year here. It feels like it's been very short. In other days, it feels like it's been a lot longer. You've got two companies that would never even talk to each other that are having very intense collaboration. It's been a unique experience for me personally. And I can't say enough about the approach that Microsoft has taken and what that's allowed us to do. So, kudos to the whole Microsoft team on what we've been able to do here, too, and also to the Novell team in stepping up. So look for some good things next year.
Sounds like people are definitely watching, Susan. Thank you. Peter.
Yeah. It's a similar vein in terms of Susan regarding interoperability. And from a customer perspective, to us, I mean, we're just saying, taking what customers are saying to us, say, build on the foundation of what we have technically, build on the foundation of what you have, and don't just start something brand new that I have to reconsider or think about buying. We have an interoperability executive council at Microsoft, and that's the underlying tone, both from our relationship, but also in terms of what we're doing as a company. You know, you're building System Center, great, add to it. You have SMS, great, add to it. You know, you have Microsoft, you know, Server Manager, great, add to it. In terms of the partnership, it has been very interesting personally and professionally. It's been great. I mean, it really has been. And I think one thing you didn't mention, the dialogue is great with the community. And I think that's what we really appreciate. You know, the more you keep giving us feedback individually, collectively, through forums, we're trying to be as transparent as we possibly can. And we want the feedback. Because we will listen and we'll do the best we can do to channel, you know, what's in our power to tweak and fine tune, because it's in its infancy. And again, it's not perfect, but it's a first step. It's a first step, and I think it's a landmark first step.
Great.
And thanks for having us here, by the way.
Peter, thank you for coming on this way. Justin, you get the first and last words up for the panel.
Great. Well, first I want to thank everybody for coming out and talking with us today. It's really good to have dialogues like this. As Peter said, we are trying to be transparent. This is probably the 100th thing panel I've done like this over the past year in the interest of being transparent. I think everyone is important. I would want to say, leave you with the fact that interoperability truly matters. And let me give you a couple of examples as to why it really matters. One that we all can relate to, everybody has a USB port on their laptop, right? Plug your devices in on a USB. USB is a standard. But without the drivers, your USB port is useless. So HP might make a printer that can plug into any USB machine, but without the drivers, you can't use that HP printer. HP collaborates with Microsoft to write the drivers for the Windows desktop. HP collaborates with Novell to write the drivers for the SUSE Linux Enterprise desktop. So there's an example of a standard, but you need collaboration between vendors to deliver that. Another example, we talked about how we're using the WS Management Framework. That's a standard. There are a million systems management standards out there. HP's been pushing Open Pegasus for a long time. Some days they're going to get there, some days they might not get there. Well, AWS management's a standard. How have we done? Microsoft and Novell made a public commitment that we're going to implement that standard and put it into our software and put the hooks into the software. So that's an example, again, of how there isn't a standard, but you need vendors to make a commitment of engineers, of actual people sitting together and writing the code to implement the standard. Novell did this deal for one reason and one reason alone. We believe there are going to be two dominant platforms in the data center come 2010, Linux and Windows. We believe that's what data centers are going to look like. And if we want to be a relevant player in that data center, we need to listen to our customers and make sure that our Linux works with Windows. Information today is siloed. Everybody knows that you can't get the information from one platform to the other platform that you need. You know, a great story from Nationwide is I sit had dinner with the CTO there, and he's like, I got a North data center and a South data center. The South data center is 100% Windows. The North data center is a little bit Unix and a little bit Linux. I wanted to all be Linux in the North data center, but what I really would like to have one data center, not a North data center and a South data center. So if we're moving towards a dynamic data center of the future, where the data center needs to be responsive to business needs, you need to be able to rapidly provision applications, you need to be able to add servers, maybe add 15 servers on the day of payroll on the 15th, and then move them on the 16th to accounts payable to do something else. You need to be able to deliver that flexibility. The only way we can deliver that flexibility is by working together in the data center on behalf of the customers. And I firmly believe that the vendors who work together on behalf of the customers are going to be the vendors who are win or going to be successful in the future. And that's why I think interoperability matters.
Justin, thank you. So there's a should toast to dynamic data centers of the future by 2000.
Exactly.
That's quite wonderful. So thank you, everyone. Thank you to this great crowd. Tom and the council want to mention one thing before we... There's a blue sheet. And I think just quick thank yous to Dan Bricklin for recording and podcasting
Thanks,
this,
Dan.
To Anne-Marie Levins and others who helped organize the panel and with whom we've had a great
thank
partnership.
You.
And, of course, to the panel. Thank you guys all for coming.
Thanks,
John. Nice job.
Thank you.